Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4, packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
When I pull up to the parking lot, it's time to level up. Dial in, showing out for your team. Listen up, get you some. I stand the fan to give you what you need. Fan fuel, game time. Turn up the intensity. Team colors bleeding now. 5 hour energy. For a limited time, get the fan fuel flavor at 5hourenergy.com.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, quick text. It says, come on, guys, don't go after Jim Nance. He was my sweet mate at the University of Houston and helped my parents move to Kingwood back in 1980, and then says, ha, 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 ha. So I think Texter knows the good-natured ribbing that we're doing right here, I think. But yeah.
We're not even ribbing Jim Nance. We just we went over the evidence, and we decided that, no, we're not gonna use him as a fulcrum to vault ourselves to viral videos
by
attacking him.
Yeah. As a vessel to bring us to higher relevancy, yes.
Yeah, we're not going to attack Jim Nance.
Nope.
You can rest easy,
nope.
Former sweet mate of Jim Nance.
Yep, we thought about it, and then we decided not to. Nick Caserio on Texans All Access last night. Nick, what are your thoughts? Well, actually, I believe the interview runs tonight on Texans All Access, but you can find it on YouTube on Tuesday nights. What are your thoughts coming out of the bye week?
Yeah, it was a good opportunity last week for the team to just really get away, honestly, for our situation. Less was more, so we didn't practice. We came in on Monday, met, went through some things, and it was really best for everybody to just kind of take a step away, kind of take inventory. Coaches had an opportunity to go through some of the film. You do a little bit of the self-scout. What are some of the things that we talked about this even going into last week? What are some of the things that we've done well? What can we improve upon? What are some things that we might be able to implement on the margins? So team's in a good spot. Came in the other day, trying to treat a normal Tuesday as a normal off day, and then get back ready to go Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, a normal week, if you will. And then once we get through the Miami game, then the timing will be a little bit different. So all we can do is control what's in front of us, which is Miami, understanding on the back end of that, we'll have to make some modifications and adjustments for the next few games.
Yeah.
Yeah, the taking the entire week off, I mean, part of that's just in the CBA now. Players have to have like a broad stretch of actual downtime, as opposed to, you know, some teams used to handle the bye week almost like, yeah, we're going to practice every day and everything. So I do think that, man, especially with the bye being as late as it was,
yeah.
And almost you could sense in the press conferences over the last couple of weeks, it wasn't the same energy. You know, I thought that every time that D'Amico got up, it looked like he was tired or just not the same. I shouldn't say tired, but maybe just not his normal self. Some of that might have been because of the...
He seemed unhappy. You know what I mean?
He seemed unhappy. Yeah. Go get the R&R, come back fresh, and be ready to attack this 11-day stretch. So I'm cool with that. I guess the biggest part is when he mentioned self-scout. The coaches and front office people are going to be back before the players and working on stuff. I wonder if they did figure some things out with the self-scout. Of like, all right, what has been working offensively? What hasn't? What can we build on? You know, what do we need to lean more into? Hopefully we see something yielded from whatever those discussions
were. Have you kind of gone through that, you know, now that we've had a couple weeks to kind of just lay low on the Texans here? Like, is it, like, if you could pick one thing to change offensively with this team and what they're doing, have you thought about that?
I would think the run game,
yeah.
Like, have some kind of a credible rushing attack.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a tough one because I think that they have figured some things out with scheme.
Yeah.
You know, they when it's worked for them, they'll do some of the gap scheme stuff where you got Cade Stover coming across the formation.
Yeah.
Offensive linemen can kind of position themselves and get in front of guys. I still really have concerns. I have concerns about when they face genuinely physical defensive lines because I don't think that they have the offensive linemen that are really capable of physically handling people. We saw that versus the Titans and the Lions. They just got manhandled. And I think that Laremy Tunsil has given good effort in the run game. I think he really has. It's just there's times where you see, okay, he's more of a finesse pass-blocking offensive tackle.
Mm-hmm.
And if he's going up against lighter defensive ends or less physical defensive ends, I think he does a good job. It's when he's got to bring a hard hat to work that it's a mismatch sometimes.
Yeah.
So I don't know what's to be done about that. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of the answers for their lack of a run game have to come in just somehow being better at executing screens than they have been. And then CJ continuing to show improvement at throwing the outlet. You know, getting it out to Joe Mixon in the flat when nobody else is available and get it out there quickly when he's got some space to run. So some of it, even like CJ's head, it's a hard environment in which to operate because the lack of pass protection. But I think that he's shown improvement over the course of the season, and it's got to be that. I don't think that all of a sudden magically they're going to go up against a team like the Lions again and just road grade dudes off the line of scrimmage.
Yeah, we'll get to the biggest X factors and unknowns going into this 3-game gauntlet they've got coming up in just a second. But as long as we're talking about the offense, here was Nick Caserio on Texans All Access. What do you want to see from the offense over the remainder of the season?
Just playing consistent football, trying to play good, clean football from start to finish. So we've done it in spurts. We've done it at different quarters. We've done it in different parts of the half. The areas that are going to have an impact on winning moving forward are going to be the turnover margin, how that goes, production on third down, and then how you perform in a red area. So when you look across the league, typically the teams that perform the best in those areas are the ones that are, you know, going to put themselves in a pretty good position. Let's say from our perspective, those are probably three tangible areas. If we can just make some incremental improvements, it's going to help the overall football team, and then just maintain a certain level of performance in the kicking game. So that's a big thing, and each week is going to present its own challenges. So the challenge in front of us here is Miami and what they provide, which we'll talk about them here in a minute. But overall, as a team, is just playing good, consistent football from start to finish, and then we'll see where we are at the end of the game.
So he mentioned three things there. Turnover margin, you know, which, okay, that's largely CJ Stroud, don't throw interceptions. And the fumbling hasn't really been an issue for this team. Third down production, that's where it gets interesting. And if you feel like the offense has taken a step back over the course of the season, that's borne out in the stats of just they're 21st in third down conversion percentage right now. A lot of that's because they faced a lot of third and longs. But over the last 3 weeks, they are 29th in third down conversion, 28th in third down conversion. They've been really bad on third down over the course of the last 3 weeks. So that's a tough one because I feel like there's a whole lot of other stuff wrapped up into that. You bundle in the inability to run on first and second down, to run consistently on first and second down, that makes that third down conversion a lot harder. So that's the one that I'm most uneasy about. Red area, again, that comes back to a lot of the rushing game and can you impose your will down in the red area? Those are really uncomfortable for me right now. Turnover margin I feel good about as long as the defense keeps being opportunistic.
CJ's gotta
clean up some of these interceptions that he's had that are non-CJ Stroud-like interceptions. Either mental errors or miscommunications.
They're worse in all these areas from a year ago. You know, they weren't great in red zone. They were better in third down conversion than they were in red zone. They were middle of the pack in red zone last year. They were a good third down offense last year. A lot of that had to do with who was playing quarterback and how he was playing. And then turnover margin. They led the league, I think, in turnover margin last year. And they've been great at turning teams over. The problem is, you know, CJ's been a little more careless with the football this year. Yeah. So they've gone backwards in all those areas. And, yeah, that would be nice if they came out of the bye week firing on all cylinders in those three areas. As far as X factors and unknowns going into this 3-game gauntlet, let's start with this. Here is Nick Caserio on the return of Christian Harris.
Anytime you're away from football, there's always going to be an adjustment period. So, to your point, Kenyon has had an opportunity. He really went through training camp. He played 8-9 games, whatever it was, missed a period of time. We'll see where he is physically. Christian's just missed a lot of football. They're no one's fault of, you know, anybody's fault. It's just a reality of where we are. So what we try to do when we prepare the athlete is monitor as best we can their loads, what they're going through. Are they physically ready for what a normal practice would look like? The game is a separate stimulus. So if, in fact, he is ready to play and does end up playing a game, that'll be another step. So nobody's going to get everything back all at once. You have to take proper steps along the way. Christian's had a good attitude despite what he's had to go through. We'll go through the week of practice. We'll evaluate it, and then we'll try to make the decision that makes the most sense for the team come Sunday.
Okay. The Christian Harris thing, Seth, would be a huge topic, even if Aziz Alshire had not been suspended, because of the mystery surrounding the injury, how Christian Harris looked at the end. You could argue he was their best defensive player in the postseason last year in those two games. He was great in the team, won great in the Ravens game. Christian Harris was really good. He had the pick six against the Browns in the previous game off of Joe Flacco. So that would be a big topic, Harris coming back, even if Aziz Alshire were suspended. The suspension of Aziz Alshire now makes, to me, I don't know defensively that there's a bigger topic for the Texans going into this Dolphins game than what exactly is Christian Harris. Like, what exactly are, what do we expect here? You know, like, is he even going to play? You know, we don't know yet. He's been activated for practice, but he and Kenyon Green have not been added back to the 53-man roster even yet.
I'm guessing that Christian Harris plays this week, and it's just a matter of how many snaps he gets. I don't know how much they can figure that out over the course of the practice week. Okay, what's our plan for Christian Harris? So I'm guessing they're just going to go in kind of with a vague snap count, and depending on game situation, maybe they do like they did with Nico Collins a few weeks ago when he returned. Nico got about 50% of his normal snaps in that game. Mm-hmm. I'm guessing that's what it is with Christian Harris. The three games in 11 days, it's a little tricky because you've got normal recovery between the first and second game, you know? So yes. I don't like that's the big part.
One day less, you know?
Yeah, like do you treat it? Yeah, that's right, because they play on Saturday.
Saturday, yeah.
But it's relatively normal. It's not the extreme part of it. Right. But you got to keep that in mind. I think that you got to almost figure, well, we want to be sure he gets enough time to recover and then make a decision again. So I don't think, just like I said, I don't think Dana Brown has a real... It's impossible for Dana Brown right now to have a really clear-cut plan for how...
Dana Brown. You just said Dana Brown. Who do you mean?
I'm talking about Dana Brown, the Astros GM.
Oh, okay. We were talking about the Texans.
Yeah, right. Okay. So like I was saying with Dana Brown, sorry where he doesn't have a clear-cut plan
I've got stuff going on in the studio here. I'm sorry.
So what's going on with Dana... Like, he doesn't have a clear-cut plan for exactly how you proceed with all these players in the offseason because he's waiting for more information to come in with offers and whatnot. Likewise, with Casario, he can't really have a clear-cut plan for how they're going to proceed with Christian Harris because they got to see how he responds to all this.
Yeah.
So that's the... we'd love to have a clear answer from Nick, but the uncomfortable reality is they don't know themselves, I don't think.
Sorry. They're coming to fix the vents in here and whatnot, and I've had to tell them.
Oh, you're afraid of burning to death in a fiery
inferno. I've had to tell them how long do you have so you can come in the studio. I've been
There's a potential electrical fire brewing.
I didn't mean to disrespect Dana Brown, yes. the other X factors... do you think there's a change at left guard coming out of it? He mentions Kenyon Green in that audio right there. Do you think there's any change with the offensive line here coming out?
I think there's a good chance. If it were me, if I were the GM.
Yes.
Now, hey, look, I'm just the guy that didn't expect that much out of Damian Pierce as a running back this year. I'm just some schmuck, I guess. That was me being the GM during the preseason. But I think that they... what was the question?
Do you expect a change at left guard coming out?
I think they should rotate those guys. Yeah. I think it should be an open tryout for left guard right now. I think there's a chance that Kenyon Green could look a lot better with Jarrett Patterson at center making the calls. And you got to open up that opportunity. Now, Juice Scruggs, it's weird. I know like DJ Bieniemy believes that Kenyon Green is just, he's your best option if you want to genuinely improve the run game.
Yeah.
I can't say that I feel any more optimistic about either of those guys at left guard right now. Like neither one of them give me the warm fuzzies. So I think it's way more of an open competition. That's how I'd have to look at it.
Does Jalen Petrie come swooping in with a cape this weekend? There's an X factor for you.
I give it a 43% chance that Jalen Tejon plays this weekend.
That's aggressive.
They would have put him on IR if they didn't think it was a possibility.
Yeah.
And look, it's a partially torn pec. Once you get the swelling down and all that, what are you going to... You go into games like that. I think Jalen Petrie is probably wired this way. You're like, well, look, if I got to have surgery on it in the offseason anyway, and I don't know that he has to or not, but let's say that's the situation. If I have to have surgery on it in the offseason anyway, it doesn't matter whether it's partially torn or fully torn. I'm just going to go out there. If it tears, it tears. That's how I'm going to operate. I think Jalen Petrie's wired that way.
They could use him, man. They really
do. Sometimes with an injury, you're kind of like, yeah, gosh, yeah, if I could just tear this thing completely, it would be less painful.
It'd be clarity, too, man. Like, all right, now I'm out. Now I don't have to sit on the fence, man.
Yeah, I don't have to worry about
it. I'm out. I'm sorry. I'm not going to be able to play, but at least now I know what the future looks like. We're still getting a lot of suggestions as to who you and I should go after, you know, name call at, like that Columbus host Rick Erdati did.
Yeah,
he called Kirk Herbstreit a D-bag, and he's gotten a lot of notoriety out of that. Someone says Lopez and his OG sauce.
During the break, you read that text, and you said, well, no, we need a big name, which I thought was a curious thing to say.
Okay. You said you were going to say that, not say that I said it during the break.
That was back before you sabotaged my Dana Brown analogy.
I didn't sabotage it. These ventilation people did out here. Whoever blew up the AC last night sabotaged it.
Is Lopez a big enough name to go after?
I said we need
not
a
to
bigger...
Get national,
I said
not
we
to
need,
get something viral.
I'll
right,
own it.
Yeah.
I said we need a bigger name than John Lopez. Because we're talking about... John Lopez is going to come in here and say he's a bigger name than Jim Nance and Charles Barkley and Shaq. He might.
He might.
He might not. He might.
No, right. To go viral nationally, we'd have to go after somebody bigger than John Lopez. Or Seth Payne or anybody else.
Or anybody else at the station. Yes. Yeah. I just said we need a bigger name. That's all.
The aggregators aren't going to pick up, you know, like...
nuance.
Sean Pendergast sabotaged Seth Payne's analogy or anything like that.
Right. All right. Payne and Pendergast with you on a Wednesday. This is these are the bodies that Netflix is throwing at your Christmas Day game.
Woo!
It is
this stocking is stuffed.
Dude, it's an army. These are the White Walkers coming in from north of the wall. How do you feel about this? If you're a Texan fan who's going to stick around at home and watch the game on Netflix, how do you feel about this crew? We will go through that coming up next.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. There will be, I would imagine, especially considering Beyonce is a halftime act, I'm expecting a sellout crowd, an excited, lively crowd on Christmas Day for the Texans and the Ravens. However, if you are one of the many who will be watching from your living rooms on Christmas Day, Netflix has dropped the graphic that shows you the number of people they are throwing at this doubleheader broadcast. The noon game is Steelers and Chiefs. The Texans are in the 3:30 game, so they're in the late window of this game. I believe the Texans play-by-play on this game is going to be Noah Eagle. It'll either be Noah Eagle or Ian Eagle, because those are the two play-by-play guys. But this graphic that they sent out has 22 people on it for two games. And I think a texter, Seth, put it best a little earlier when we touched on this in headlines, where they said, I saw that graphic on Twitter yesterday, and I was wondering, exactly how many games is Netflix broadcasting on Christmas Day?
Yeah, it's a lot.
Yeah.
So they're throwing a lot, which I usually, when you're trying something for the first time, the rule of thumb is always just simplify. This goes back to the old space missions initially. They realized, like, okay, we gotta dial this thing back and just focus on the things that we really need to get right to avoid some of the potential disasters. Likewise, I would say with Netflix, man, this is a whole lot of bodies, which means a whole lot of extra cameras, which means a whole lot of extra engineers and everything. And this is coming off the heels of a Pulse, the Tyson Paul fight where a lot of stuff went wrong technically.
Yes.
I don't think they need to be messing with this many people. The first thing I saw in replies to a lot of the Netflix football broadcast stuff was like, all right, is my stream going to work? Am I actually going to be able to watch this thing, or is it going to be glitchy like it was with the Tyson fight?
Yep. I'm counting up right now. There's 22 people, 22 faces on this graphic. Anywhere from play-by-play guys to clearly guys who are going to be color analysts on the broadcast. Scott Hansen's on here. He's the host of NFL Red Zone. I don't know how much need there is for a red zone element to this, considering that these are the only games going on. You're not jumping around the league, but maybe they've got two comedians on here, including Bert Kreischer. They've got Bert Kreischer and Nate Bargatze on here.
Yeah.
I'm counting up the number of bodies because I like where your head's at on the simplification of this. You're right. Hey, Netflix, this is your first time you're dipping your toe in this water. And I get it. You maybe want to look and sound a little different. You see that sometimes when new streaming services or networks are picking up games like Apple. Yeah. Remember Apple made, what's her name? Katie Nolan, the ambassador of fun. And they had her doing stuff. Like it got,
you could tell that she was like scrolling, like responding to Twitter trolls while she was on air. It was a weird fit.
Right. So I'm counting. There's 22 faces on this graphic they put out. As far as what you need for Netflix, I think you need a studio show. And they've already announced the studio show is going to be Kay Adams hosting alongside Mina Kimes, RG3, Drew Brees, and Manti Te'o. So that's the studio show. So that's five people right there. For each of the games, you need a play-by-play. They're going to go with two color analysts. You need a sideline reporter. That's four times two games. That's eight. So that's 13 people. I guess maybe you want like an insider or something like that. That's why Ian Rappaport is on here.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Maybe so an
and Steve Weiss. Steve Weiss also.
Steve Weiss. Yeah. So you need two insiders. So now we're up to 15 people.
Did you mention Burleson yet?
Burleson is one of the color analysts. So he, okay. He's accounted for on here.
Okay.
I'm up to 15 people that Netflix needs in order to have the simple broadcast you're looking for.
Yeah.
There's still seven leftovers on here that I have no idea what we're doing with, including
these
two comedians.
the comedian stuff.
You like stand-up comedy, so you're
I like stand-up comics. Yeah. And like Kreischer will be interesting because when Netflix has used him before in golf, at least when I saw it, it was one of those celebrity match play deals that they did. Kreischer was just a mess, but that's what he is. Like he's kind of a mess. That's his whole brand.
Yep.
So I'm curious how the NFL will view Kreischer. Kreischer is like, hey, I'm gonna take my shirt off and get drunk, which doesn't quite jibe with the way the NFL likes to handle things.
Yeah.
So I'm curious to see exactly how they use him.
Okay, so here's I found an article that lists what everybody's going to be doing here. The LA pregame show, they're doing a pregame show from the NFL Network studios in Los Angeles. That'll be the five people that I just mentioned. Adams, Breeze, RG3, Manti Te'o, Mina Kimes. There is a Pittsburgh pregame show, I'm guessing on site. That's Laura Rutledge and the McCourty twins.
Yeah.
I'm not big on the McCourty twins. I hate to say it because they seem like nice guys. I just, it's their star rising as much as it has so quickly is a little befuddling. Additionally, comedian Bert Kreischer joins Christmas Game Day as a tailgate correspondent.
There you go.
And
yep,
Nate Bargatze will provide special guest commentary.
So I think Bargatze's going to probably be kind of like the, the one that, what's her name? She does the roasts really well. Nikki Glaser.
Yeah.
So Nikki Glaser kind of roasts people after the game and stuff, and she does a good job with that.
On Amazon.
So, yeah, Bargatze's, I wonder what they'll do with him. That stuff's easy enough to handle because they'll have some prepackaged type things.
The Kreischer thing aligns with exactly how you just described him, right? Like, that could go horribly out there.
Yeah, if there was a Buffalo game on the slate, he'd be crashing through card tables and everything else. Yeah.
Yep.
I think it'll go, and some people will think it is horrible, and other people will be just like, yep, that's exactly what you bring in Kreischer for.
It'll be in Pittsburgh, which is where Amy and I just were this past weekend. So we walked through all those tailgates. I'm getting excited about this. Now, we won't get to see it because we're going to be doing the pregame. We're going to be on the air for Texans.
So who's the color commentator for the Texans?
I will tell you that right now. Here are the announced teams for the two games. The Chiefs-Steelers game is Ian Eagle, Nate Burleson, and J.J. Watt. So J.J.'s doing a TJ game. J.J. is doing a game his brother's in.
I don't like the fact, boy, the Steelers are putting on kind of a They're putting him on a better sell for JJ to come play for the Steelers in the Texans.
I know. Yeah. He was pretty
And JJ was at the Steelers game with you last
week. Waving his towel. Yeah, he was. We were hanging out 800 feet from each other. the on-air talent for the Texans-Ravens game. Noah Eagle, Greg Olson, Jamie Erdahl, and Steve Wyche.
Okay, so I like that we get Olson. That'll be nice. Okay,
yeah,
good.
We get Olson, we get Wyche, Erdahl. That's a four. I don't think my guess is that that's not four people all in the booth.
I think it'll just be Olson and Eagle in the booth, and then Erdahl and Wyche will be sideline reporter or other types of things.
There you go. Eagle and Olson will be the play-by-play during the game. Erdahl and Wyche will be reporting from the sidelines. Good guess, Seth. Okay. There you go. That's what it says right there.
All right, I'm good. You know what? Olson doing the Texans, that's all I need. I'm really excited about that, Ben. Yes, great. Olson is one of those color commentators that when you come and do a game for my team, do you actually point things out that hadn't occurred to me or that you teach me something about the team that I cover? That's my barometer where I'm like, oh, damn, this guy knows his stuff. Yeah. And Olson is one of those guys.
They've been doing some media, it sounds like, because Noah Eagle, son of Ian Eagle and play-by-play guy for the Texans game. He says, aside from Beyonce, this is an outstanding quarterback matchup. There you go, a little joke in the media. That's good. Ian Rapoport is...
Congratulations on touching anything Beyonce or Jay-Z with a 10-foot stick right now.
Yeah,
good job.
No kidding.
Edgy unto itself.
Oh, my God. I had totally forgotten about that. Wow. Do you think that impacts the lineup for Christmas Day?
I'm so far checked out on any of that. I don't know.
For those who don't know, Jay-Z's name has started to get blended into some of the Diddy stories.
Yeah, I don't have a clue, man. It's just too, you got to wade through so much bad reporting and everything on all that stuff that it's hard.
Ian Rapoport is going to be providing insider reporting and breaking news. Gene Steratore. Okay. Oh, we forgot this. Gene Steratore. You need a rules analyst. Gene Steratore is the rules analyst for these two games. So he's the guy.
Those guys all look and sound alike to me. I have yet to figure out which rules analyst I actually like or don't like. I'm just happy to have a voice. Whoever corrects Tony Romo repeatedly, that's the guy I like. Who is that?
That's Gene. Yeah, that's
Gene Steratore.
Yeah, because Gene is...
I admire his patience, too, with Tony Romo.
Because three times a game, Tony immediately goes to Gene. Like, if there's anything, even... Gene?
What are you... And then Tony doesn't understand what Gene said, so Gene has to restate it. Like, more clearly, run it through AI and do it at a whatever level.
They picked the right guy. They picked the right guy for this. Scott Hansen, who I had questions like, why is the Red Zone host on here? Well, Seth... The game will be available globally to Netflix subscribers in English, French, Spanish, Portuguese, and German. Breeze and NFL Red Zone host Scott Hansen will also provide additional commentary outside the U.S. with international anchors to be announced. So they've still got a whole bunch more people to announce for the global aspect of this one. This is just the U.S. part.
We have a good amount of people listening to the show right now who are overseas.
Yeah.
A lot of servicemen and women listen to our show from Germany and whatnot. So there you go.
We've
got your Scott Hansen.
Yeah, no, we appreciate it. Someone said they like Dean Blandino better than Gene Steratore. I don't have a strong feeling. I'm with Seth, the guy who has to deal with Romo on a daily basis. That's the go.
You asked a good question during the break, which was like, okay, what percentage of people have Netflix?
Yeah.
Because when they first started doing games on Amazon, I was kind of surprised to see how many people, like a pretty large majority of Americans, have Amazon.
It's like 60%
Prime
at the time, yeah.
Netflix, it's from, I found different numbers from all over, anywhere between like 50 and 65% of Americans have Netflix.
Yeah.
This is the thing with why this, I think, appeals to the NFL, though. For people age 18 to 34, 75% of Americans have Netflix.
That's their cable,
And they're trying to reach out to the youngs as much as possible.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. All right, so there you go. We got you ready for Christmas Day. 2 weeks ahead of time. It's 2 weeks from today. Holy crap. The Texans play three games.
What's Matt Tateo doing?
He's in the
studio?
He's part of the studio show in L.A.
Okay.
Yeah, they're doing a studio show based out of L.A. for these games. And he's been on the NFL Network. He's been pretty good the times I've watched him. He's very self-deprecating when it comes to his saga.
You know what the biggest difference with the McCourty twins, like you mentioned, you can't quite get into them. I can tell the difference between Tiki and Rondé. They're yes. identical twins, but I feel like their personalities are different enough that yeah. I can tell. I like without even looking at them, I can tell who they are. I don't have a clue with the McCourty twins.
Yes,
I don't have a single clue on earth which is which.
You're not alone.
So it's probably indicative. And I think the Barbers, yeah, they just have more of a personality.
Yeah, yeah, and they're different. Yeah, the McCourtys, they could play the trick very easily, where one of them shows up to take the other one's gig for a day. You know, if you feel
it's
like
probably why they're appealing to people. They might think a lot of Devin might get hired because like some producer's like, oh yeah, I worked with him
yeah.
before without realizing it was actually Jason McCourty.
That would be bad though. Like if they were like one was really good at their job and one was really poor, but they just get blended yeah. in. You know what I mean? Like which McCourty? All right, Eagle strife. The Philadelphia Eagles got some strife going on. There's beef going on in the building. What would the Texans' equivalent of this be? What could the internal beef be for the Texans over the course of this season so far? We will discuss that coming up next.
Live from the Twin Peaks Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
A lot of people weighing in on the Netflix stuff. A lot of people glad that they're going to the game after the Tyson-Paul fight debacle with the streaming. I'm confident that they've worked out some of the kinks, I would hope, and B, this will, I don't know that the audience, for it'll be a big audience. It's NFL football on a holiday. I mean, there's going to be 20, 30 million people watching this. I think there was more than that watching. That Paul Tyson fight was crazy viewership numbers. You know,
it was crazy viewership numbers, but it crashed everything.
Yeah.
Now, the one saving grace for the NFL is that the total number of people watching is also going to include people who in Houston are watching on broadcast television.
Yes.
And in Baltimore. Broadcast television. So for those of you who don't have Netflix, don't worry, it will be available locally.
Yes.
It's just in all those other markets, you gotta watch it on Netflix.
There you go. So this the Philadelphia Eagles got some stuff going on right now. This has been a big story in no small part because they keep winning, even though they've got stuff going on. And I don't know that Nick Sirianni is the right coach for this kind of stuff, other than they keep winning and Nick Sirianni just feels a little Forrest Gump-like, where things just seem to land his way, you know? But A.J. Brown and Jalen Hurts may be beefing right now. This was after the game on Sunday. A win, by the way, over the Carolina Panthers. A.J. Brown was asked, hey, what part of the offense could improve right now?
What are some things you think that the offense needs to improve on?
Passing.
Passing is what he said right there. It's just one word answer, passing. This was Brandon Graham, longtime defensive end for the Eagles, leader in that locker room, doing a hit on WIP, our sister station up in Philadelphia, basically confirming that there is stuff going on right now between the quarterback and the wide receiver.
The person that's complaining need to be accountable. And I'm just being honest. You know okay. what I'm saying? Like, and he noticed. He, you know, I don't know the whole story, but I know that one is trying. And, I mean, 11 could be a little better with how he responds to things. And they was friends before this. It's like, man, but things have changed. And I understand that because life happens.
Okay. So, I mean,
the biggest thing, there is so much there. One, acknowledgement that, yes, there is an issue. Yep. Two, blaming A.J. Brown for the issue. Yeah.
Brandon Graham took a side.
But even then, you know, like, okay, well, maybe this is just a diva wide receiver kind of spouting off. They were friends before this, and implying that now they are not. So that
I wonder if there's a woman involved. Let's get on AI and find out who their significant others are. Not right now. You don't need to do it right now, but unless you want to. They were friends. Like he literally said, they were friends. So I was wondering, like with this, you know, we're not in Philly, we're in Houston. You know, Philly's got strife going on in their locker room. So be it. I can tell you're looking it up right now.
I wanted to check my details when you said there was a woman involved, maybe or what it maybe yeah. Steve Nash sprang to mind. Because Steve Nash's child turned out to be the child of a teammate.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
That's okay. About as ugly as it gets.
Yeah. Okay. I got to
find his that. Wife, they broke up a few months before the baby was born after rumors of cheating allegations.
Okay.
And I can't remember. He thought it was one teammate, and it turned out to be a different teammate.
Okay, okay.
But both of them could have been actually the father,
she was
conceivably.
Active. Okay, yeah.
She was out there. So hopefully it's not that. God,
I hope not. I hope not. Let's pretend it's just normal football stuff. You're not targeting me enough. You run too much. I want the football, blah, blah, blah. I was thinking about this with the Texans, because this is a team, the Eagles, that are, what, they're on a 9-game winning streak. They're 11-2 right now. You could argue that they and Detroit are the two best teams in football right now, and yet they've got all this stuff going on in the locker room. The Texans seem very harmonious behind the scenes. If there were something going on with the Texans so far this season, Seth, where we could have seen something like this, or maybe it was even justified to see something like this, like one player disappointed in a certain part of the team. The one that springs to mind immediately is that C.J. Stroud, not only has he not said anything derogatory about the protection for him during that really bad period they were going through, he actually stuck up for the offensive line. Like, he could have just said nothing, you know? Like, he did that press conference where he's like, you know, you guys have been criticizing him, so when they play well, I want you guys to come back and you know, say good things about them. So I think that would have been, like, the CJ would have been the one thing, like, if there were an equivalent to what's going on with Jalen Hurts and A.J. Brown, that would be the one for me, where one guy is disappointed in the performance of another guy or group on the team. That would have been the big one for me.
Yeah, the CJ and either the interior offensive line, CJ and, I guess, Stephon Diggs. It wouldn't have been because of CJ. Like, Stephon Diggs was the one that everybody had their eyes on. It's like, okay, boy, the production isn't what he probably thought it was going to be. Stephon Diggs, to his credit, I thought, acted just about every way you would want him to act in a situation like that. He was the guy telling the team, like, hey, we got to maintain focus and keep trying to get better and all that. Like, there was not a hint of disgruntlement out of Stephon Diggs before he got injured.
No, you're right. Now, he didn't really have to live through the muck part of the season here. I mean, he hurt himself in the Colts game. They were 6-2 after. I mean, he was there for the Green Bay game, and that was horrible. They only had 86 yards passing. But that was the first, like, really bad performance passing-wise. Mm-hmm. It was almost like that was Stephon Diggs' mulligan for the offense. You know,
And then
he gets hurt against the Colts. So he didn't really go through the losing to the Jets. Now, maybe he affects winning and they don't lose to the Jets. Who knows? But let's pretend the results are the same with Stephon as they were without him. That would have been very interesting to see him go through the loss to the Jets, the loss to the Lions, all these games where they're not scoring touchdowns in the second half of these games, the loss to the Titans, barely beating the Jacksonville Jaguars again, you know?
It's strange. Emotionally, the way I think myself and I sense a lot of people in the fan base have kind of handled the whole Stephon Diggs situation, which is, the offense has taken a step back as the season has gone along, and yet you don't really see the absence of Stephon Diggs mentioned as part of that because the promise of the offseason wasn't delivered on while Diggs was there. It's almost like you don't even acknowledge that, he was still a positive presence on the offense.
Yeah.
Like, we've probably wringed our hands more over the loss of Azeez Alshire for three games than we did over Stephon Diggs being lost for the entire season.
You're right about that.
Which is a reflection of just how bad the offense, well, I guess how disappointing the offense has been.
Disappointing, and I think, too, that in some ways the offense, even without Diggs, doesn't have an excuse to at least be average. They're below average right now. This is the same group of guys that was an above average offense last year by a lot of metrics, except
Joe Mixon.
Except Joe Mixon, and your entire offensive line has been healthy other than Kenyon Green, who was the worst of the five of them.
Wasn't here last year.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's like, no Diggs does not let the offense off the hook. That's my thought on it.
Yeah, they were disappointing with Diggs.
Yes,
and you didn't really get to see a whole lot of Diggs and Tank Dell and Nico Collins together.
That's
but
right.
We saw enough to know that, all right, this isn't what we thought we were going to get.
Yep.
But it is a contributing factor right now. I feel like 5 years from now, if Stephon Diggs doesn't re-sign with the Texans this next year, it's going to be one of those things that you have to remind yourself of. That this thing that was the, like, one of the big stories in the NFL all offseason long was that, oh yeah, remember when Stephon Diggs was on the Texans in 2024? That was weird.
And the more the Texans win, if they win, the less it'll be, the more it just gets buried in your subconscious. You know what I mean? Like, it's if they're winning, you know, who cares? It's a text message. Isn't Scott Hansen that To Catch a Predator guy? That's a different Scott Hansen, if I'm not mistaken.
That's Chris Hansen.
That's Chris Hansen. Thank you, Ben. Thank you.
I made the same mistake.
Oh, did you? Okay.
isn't Scott Hansen a linebacker for the Texans?
That's Jake Hansen. Yeah.
Oh, all right.
All the Hansons. Gotcha. All the Hansons. The Umbop Hansons. All right. Payne and Pendergast with you, heading into the 9 o'clock hour. Is Nick Caserio the only one that is enthusiastic or supportive or thinks Bill Belichick to North Carolina could work out? And this North Carolina story is fascinating. There's stuff going on there, man.
Yeah, they got drama.
They got drama, yeah.
It ain't just illegal academic transfer.
No. This is new drama.
More.
Yeah, this is new drama.
Wait, was that UNC or Duke?
It was UNC, yeah.
It was UNC,
yeah. They were taking fake courses, yeah. All right, so we'll talk about that coming up next.